So in my clinical work, I got a lot of questions asking about obstructive sleep apnea, OSA. So I've been reading some research paper recently. Some recent review paper quoted research from 10 years ago, already stating OSA being impacting more than 25% adults in America. And they also estimate globally is actually impacting almost 936 million adults aged between 30 and 69. And a lot of people take years before they are even diagnosed OSA. And only a small percentage of adults actually go to seek treatment for sleep apnea. So what are some new developments in the field of sleep apnea treatment? What are some treatment options? What are some common sleep myths around sleep apnea that we thought we know, but we could be wrong? So today, our guest, Dr. Christopher Allen, will help us debunk all this sleep myth and help us to understand the new development in the field of obstructive sleep apnea. Let me introduce Dr. Allen first. He's known as Sleep Dr. Chris on social media. Dr. Christopher Allen is a board-certified sleep medicine physician and pediatric neurologist. He holds certifications by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, with subspecialties in sleep medicine and child neurology. He serves as sleep science advisor to Aeroflow Sleep. He owns his own practice and is knowledgeable in heart health. He also loves neurology, and sleep is his passion. You will feel that from our conversation. He has made it his personal mission to ensure patients like you get quality sleep. I had a very interesting conversation with him, and I hope you like it. Hello, Dr. Allen. Welcome to Deep Into Sleep podcast.
I was glad to be here. Thank you for having me on here.
Very excited. I know you are in the sleep conference recently, and I know you are also a sleep expert, especially treating sleep apnea. You have a lot of knowledge in that. So I want to get started just by asking you, what are some common relationship between sleep apnea and some other different type of sleep disorders?
Well, you know, it's funny because in the world of sleep medicine, it's not like you get one disorder and then it cancels out every disorder. You still have the option to like get all other types of disorders as well. And with obstructive sleep apnea, the funny thing about it, you know, with this sleep disorder breathing, once you have it under control and have another sleep disorder, sometimes it makes it better. So, for example, there is a disorder that's called restless leg syndrome, where in the evening you feel like this weird, creepy, crawly sensation going up your legs, feeling like, I got to move my legs. And there's treatments for that and there's medication, but they've seen that if someone has obstructive sleep apnea and get treated, that their symptoms can get better. And sometimes I've had patients where if their symptoms are, if I'm on the line of seeing if they want to treat them with medication and they have obstructive sleep apnea, I'm going to treat the obstructive sleep apnea first. Because treating that first, sometimes it will help relieve those symptoms of restless leg syndrome sometimes. Another one is like insomnia, and actually they mend it together, which is called COMISA, which is like combined obstructive sleep apnea and insomnia. And so with my patients, I've seen that when you treat obstructive sleep apnea, sometimes it makes their insomnia better as well. Because if you think you have this disorder where you're pausing and breathing and your body's waking up constantly, that can help perpetuate insomnia. And so you have that. And so also going back to restless leg syndrome, there's this disorder that's called periodic limb movements of sleep. I usually see that within obstructive sleep apnea as well. So pretty much, you know, you have to make sure you tailor the therapy, because if you treat the obstructive sleep apnea, other disorders will be better.
Yeah, totally. my observation similarly, why I treat insomnia mostly. Sometimes we do share with the patients, especially when I detect any signals there's possible sleep apnea in the picture. I actually encourage some of my insomnia patients to check it out, to do a sleep study and to really get diagnosed to see whether they have any sleep breathing problem. And if they do, we do encourage them to treat that first, because that can help improve their sleep quality a lot. And some people, yes, after that, they don't need extra treatment for insomnia anymore.
Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, the patients, when I see them, they think they have insomnia. And it's like, well, you're just waking up in the middle of the night and you don't know why. And then I treat their obstructive sleep apnea. And then sometimes it further helps you know that, like, maybe this wasn't really insomnia as well.
Yeah, right. After learning sleep knowledge, I learned that there are so many different types of sleep disorders out there, not just one or two. There are more than, I think, 80 or 90, maybe more nowadays. I think it's important to see a sleep expert to really figure that out. What are in the picture exactly? Maybe multiple different things.
Yeah, it's funny. I always joke. There's two things I do. I always joke with like my colleagues and like even patients. I tell them that I'm not a sleep apnea doctor. I'm a sleep doctor. And there's like so many disorders within the field of sleep medicine. And even when I give talks, I always show the criteria of what you're supposed to know as a board certified sleep doctor. And it's like three slides of just showing everything I'm supposed to know. So they understand, it's like, look, this is not just insomnia. This is not just obstructive sleep apnea.
Yeah, I love that. In the field, I noticed, at least in the behavioral sleep medicine side, there's so many people just get like very easy certificate, maybe through a workshop or something. They say, oh, I'm like certified CBTI like expert or something. I was like, huh, that's very narrowed area. First, you don't learn CBTI deeply. And then you say, oh, then you can treat sleep disorders since then.
Yeah, and you have to be careful in that. And I always tell people that, and even patients, you know, ask for the credentials. That's only fair. You know, if they ask for me, I'm going to show them mine. And yeah, I remember there was like, with obstructive sleep apnea, I was ordering a CPAP for one of my patients. It was this company, I don't even remember the name of it. But then they were like, hi, my name is, I'm making up this name. Hi, my name is Brad. I'm a sleep specialist. And I'm like, hold on, a what? So, yes, you have to be careful when someone says that they have a specialty in it. Because if they do, hey, tell them, show those papers.
Yeah, yeah. Papers represent how extensive the training, the knowledge could be, right? I really feel like the more you have learned, like you learn all these different sleep disorders, then it's really helped when we see something, we can treat it or understand it better. And so I'm curious, you're in sleep conference this time. Have you noticed any new trend in the field of sleep apnea, like any interesting, impressive research around it?
Since the Sleep 2025 is ending, I'm pretty much taking it all in. But it's really great of just some of the things that are on the horizon. And even with obstructive sleep apnea, you know, you always have your trendy things that people are talking about. And one of the things that they're talking about that came out in December is like there's a medication to actually treat obstructive sleep apnea, which is terbrazetide or Zepbound. And, you know, there's been courses, there's been panels on it. And so the field is really excited about it. And then, you know, it's something that we knew all along that if you have a significant amount of weight loss, that's going to help, depending on the severity, like resolve obstructive sleep apnea. And so now we're seeing it come into fruition. And it's really great because losing weight anyway and choosing, you know, going towards health, that's going to be helpful anyway overall. And so that was one thing. There's going to be some new guidelines coming out in probably at the end of the year or next year regarding treating patients with obstructive sleep apnea in the inpatient field, in the inpatient hospital. And so that's something I'm looking forward to as well. And then countless of research papers that were out there where it's like, I just love where the field is going.
Yes, great. Even though I did not go to the conference this year, the medication, the new medication, I did hear a lot bought it from other channels. I hope the medication, I don't know how you think about that. I hope it's promising and it can bring some new change in the field. I also know there's a trend move into easier access to sleep study or use devices, trackers to replace those spend the night in the hospital type of sleep study.
And it depends on how you look at it, because yes, there's always, and if you go into the exhibition halls, you'll see all these devices that people are coming up with. And, you know, and at the end of the day, they call the polysomnogram, which is the sleep study, the gold standard. And no matter whatever comes up, that will always be the gold standard. And there'll be other things to help out from that. But the thing where I feel like it drives the most is if the sleep physician or the sleep provider is at the helm of this, then we'll be okay. And even with certain medications that they're looking at to treat obstructive sleep apnea or the weight loss medications that they're using to treat obstructive sleep apnea, we in the field know what we need to do to help them out. And sometimes it can be scary too. It's like, oh no, they're going to make us close all our sleep labs because they're going to tell us to go that way. But at the end of the day, the key word is gold standard. Over years, there's been changes to our field where there's been a fear factor of saying, like, what will this do to the field? But at the end of the day, we're still moving and thriving. There will be some fear factor, but I'm really excited how there are going to be things to help us treat our patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need more different type of treatment. We need the diagnose process to be easier. And a lot of patients, I think they have some kind of sleep breathing problem. They just are not aware of that. And I'm from China, right? A lot of Chinese patients I see, they think snoring is so normal until I start challenging them.
It's a tell us oldest time. And I think you nailed it right on the dot, is that I think for the field of sleep medicine, what we need to do is just the awareness. And right now, you know, with the trackers and everything, people are being aware of their sleep, but also taking that next step to say, if you are snoring, that's not normal. If you're taking the recommended amount of sleep and you're still tired, that's not normal. Does it necessarily mean you have a sleep disorder? No, but you should look into it. And I always tell people, knowledge is power, and sleep is so sacred. And people are very sensitive when you start bringing up sleep, and it can get to a point where people can be defensive. And I think, you know, it's just knocking down those barriers are going to be things to help us.
Yes, wonderful. Since we already start touching on some sleep myths, sounds like people believe it's true or did not know, actually they believe whatever they consider is true actually is wrong. So what are some common sleep myths you notice in your own clinical work and your research, all that you think our audience really should be aware of?
Well, the first thing is that some of the myths is like, first one is obstructive sleep apnea does not have like the stereotype, because people look at someone and say, oh, I can look at someone and see if they have obstructive sleep apnea. And it's a structural disorder where it deals with airway collapse. And so obstructive sleep apnea, yes, can it happen? It does happen the most in men. But then after, you know, menopause, that changes. And if you're overweight, definitely it can. But just because you're not those characteristics doesn't mean that you won't have obstructive sleep apnea. So that's one of the myths that I'm aware of that my patients feel like they have, because they'll come in and it's like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, I'm not, like, I don't look like this. And so that's one of them. The second thing is that, and we already talked about it, snoring. Snoring is not normal. And, you know, even growing up, you would look at a cartoon and you see someone peacefully sleeping. What will they do? You start seeing those little Z's thinking that like, oh, wow, they're sleeping. They're snoring. You know, look at them peacefully sleeping or deeply sleeping. No, snoring is a partial airway obstruction that could lead to a sleep disorder. Those are one of those myths as well. And this one, and I think it'll lead into another question, is that there's more than one way to treat obstructive sleep apnea. I'll come in and I'll see a patient, and if they're a little apprehensive, I'll be like, hi, I'm Dr. Allen. And they'll look at me and say, well, I'm not wearing that CPAP. And I'm like, I didn't even sit down yet. And I'm like, let's talk and see, you know, what's going to happen. And there are so many ways that you can treat obstructive sleep apnea. It definitely does depend on your severity, but it's not CPAP or bust.
Yes, exactly. That's actually a question I do want to ask you. I have so many patients too, including my own family member. They just refuse to use CPAP. It's not comfortable, no matter what we try. And they want to know, is there another way? Some people even are willing to consider surgery, right? It's such invasive, severe like method. What are some treatment options available actually other than CPAP?
Well, before we talk about other than CPAP, you got to think of what CPAP is. And CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure. I give this talk to my patients every time because I always tell them, if we're going to do something, I have to tell you the why. And I feel like a lot of people don't give them that why. So that's why they're adverse to CPAP therapy. And that last word is the most important part, pressure. So, you know, you wear a mask and that pressure keeps your airway open. Like if this is your mouth and this is the back of your throat, your airway is open. It has air going in and out. The reason why I bring up CPAP therapy, there's different modes of pressure. So there can be bi-level PAP, or people will call it BiPAP, where the modality of pressure is different. When you're breathing in and out, the pressure will fluctuate, and that can be more comfortable for some people that has tried CPAP therapy. So that's another option. So there's still PAP therapy that you can use. I just came from the sleep conference. There's something that's called like K-PAP, where they're using a different modality in a different way to treat obstructive sleep apnea. People are, you know, if they're adverse to the mask, I always tell them before we start talking about different methods, there's different masks, because everyone will say, I've tried all the type of mask. And I was like, there's over 200 different types of masks. And I have obstructive sleep apnea. I've been treated for 21 years, and I haven't tried all the masks. So I'm like, I know you haven't tried over 200 masks. And so before we go to the therapies, there's different ways from there. But when it comes to them, and I always tell patients that there's other options. There's the mandibular advancement device. There's a device you can put in your mouth, and it opens up your airway for when you're sleeping to make sure that that's taken care of. There's also myofascial therapy that people can use. And if you do it the correct way and with people that are certified to do it, that can treat obstructive sleep apnea as well. Also, there is, you know, you talk about surgeries, and then the, you know, back in the day, there used to be surgeries where they would like remove the soft palate, the tonsils, the uvula. They used to call it the UP3 surgery. And people have pretty much gotten away from it because there's been other modalities. There's, for example, the hypoglossal nerve stimulator. People know it as Inspire, and people have probably seen the commercial or heard it because they're really good at marketing for it. And what it will do is that it will connect to the hypoglossal nerve, where that's the nerve that's will move your tongue forward, and it has a sensor with the diaphragm. And so once you're breathing, the thought process is, you know, it will move your tongue forward to open up that airway. And so those are, you know, there are a lot of medications. There's, and we spoke about it earlier, there's turbicitide, which is Zepbound, which is another medication to treat that. And, you know, and with those medications, I always tell patients that I know it's a weight loss medication. Weight loss doesn't happen overnight. So there's other ways. And so you can actually do both with it. And when you get to the weight loss where your obstructive sleep apnea is resolved, then it'll be helpful. And we're in the field where you have many ways to treat it in the field of sleep medicine. We've been really good telling people about CPAP therapy. And even if they don't have it or don't even know what CPAP is, they know the mask, there's still other ways to treat it.
Yeah, I think that's very hopeful for a lot of people to know, right? First, understand the gold standard method, what that really does for you, and then what your body needs. Talk to your doctors and maybe tailor out some kind of treatment plans best for you and what kind of method works best.
And the biggest thing is like always be an advocate for yourself. Like if you're on CPAP therapy and something's wrong, you know, talk to the provider that provided for you. And if you're not seeing a sleep professional, that's the chance we get to see a sleep professional because we have some extra tools. In my practice, I have a sleep tech that is certified in clinical sleep health. And she's phenomenal where she'll get to the patient and figure out what the problems are that are happening. A lot of reasons why you have noncompliance is because people don't have that support. And it's great to even have that support to see if PAP therapy is not for you, because you have other things you can definitely use.
Yeah, That's great to know. And another question patients often ask me is, once you start CPAP therapy, does that mean you're going to have to use that forever until the end of your life?
You know, I tell people that, like, using CPAP therapy is kind of like wearing glasses. It's correctional. For example, they'll tell me, oh, I'm getting ready to go on a vacation. Are you going to, do I have to take my CPAP with me? And I'm like, well, are you taking your glasses? Of course. Well, glasses help you see. CPAP helps you breathe. And the thing is that I even said that I've been using my CPAP for 21 years. It's a lifestyle. It's something that I know if I use, I'm going to get quality sleep. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to feel alert. So the answer to that question, yeah, it's something that it is indefinite. Now, there are some other ways where you can get it resolved, but the most important part with CPAP therapy, it corrects it. And that is a bit greater benefit. Like, I would rather use CPAP for 21 years because my 21 years will look different than it does now if I have not been using it. You know, as far as weight, as far as not getting quality sleep, worsening high blood pressure or diabetes or stroke, getting it treated. Yeah, a lot of people think that, like, wow, I might have to use this indefinitely. But then I just tell them to think of it as glasses or brushing your teeth. It's something that you do a part of, like, your hygiene and your health.
Yeah, it's really make it become part of your habit. And sounds like also a way to take care of yourself.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about the blood pressure, the heart, all that. I definitely want to ask more questions about, you know, what it does to our body. But before that, I also want to ask, other than CPAP, nowadays there's so many popular, like, social media influencers talking about many other strange ways to deal with your breathing problem during sleep, right? Like the mouth taping and whatever other ways the young people are posting nowadays. What do you think about those?
Well, one, this is a shameless plug. That's one of the biggest reasons that I became a sleep influencer, because I would see videos and I'm like, well, that's not right. And the thing is that I always tell people at the beginning, if you feel like there's something wrong with your sleep, bring it up to your provider. Find a sleep professional that can help you with it. Because, you know, people will try everything. And I was at that point where I used to try everything. I remember there used to be these nasal sprays that I would try, or nasal strips. And people are, you know, sometimes apprehensive to get those testings to see if you have a sleep disorder, because they don't know that, like, there's other things you can do to have it treated. And they are averse to CPAP therapy. And as you brought up, you know, mouth taping. There are studies to show that, you know, there's things that can help with flow. And if someone doesn't have obstructive sleep apnea and using it, potentially could be. But here's the hard part. You need to get tested. You can't feel that you don't have sleep apnea or say that I don't snore and all of this. If you're feeling that you're using mouth tape for a certain reason, well, I'm doing it because my mouth is dry. Well, your mouth might be dry because you are opening your airway up because you're pausing and breathing overnight, and that's why your mouth is dry. Or people are like, well, I'm snoring, so I, you know, my wife doesn't like it, so I'll cover it. Well, the reason why you're snoring, you might have a sleep disorder breathing, like obstructive sleep apnea, to treat it. I feel like it needs to be in the right hands of that. You know, so before you start using your mouth tape or your mocktails to help you go to sleep, you know, talk to a provider, because there's ways. And I always tell patients that, you know, it's not my job for you to be on medication. I just want to make sure that you're treated. And medication is going to be the last step. People are learning and from their trackers and looking more into their sleep. And I feel like sleep is being very trendy. There's that extra step that I feel like people have to do to get into that.
Yeah, not just to cover up the symptoms, really need to dig down to say what's the problem behind that, whether there's any disorders, problem you really need to treat. Sounds like if someone actually are diagnosed with sleep apnea, maybe those kind of like trendy methods like mouth taping could be kind of risky to have to be very careful to talk to the doctor to decide.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. When you talk, I have this analogy, not sure whether I understand correctly. I feel like it's like we have a stomach ache and then we just eat painkiller. It's like, just stop the pain, right? But then there may be something really wrong with our body.
Yeah, and the hard part about it, because I call sleep apnea the slow killer. And if you have a sleep disorder, and not even sleep apnea, you know, not getting quality sleep, it leads into other disorders. Even if you don't have obstructive sleep apnea, it can lead into like high blood pressure. It can make diabetes worse. It can affect your mood. It doesn't help you consolidate like your memory if you're not getting good quality sleep overnight. And so seeing if you have a sleep disorder like obstructive sleep apnea or just getting quality sleep in general, that's where it leads to. And there's this new system that they call it, which is the glymphatic system, where it's within the brain and you are pretty much clearing out your toxins in your brain while you're asleep. So if you're not doing that while you're asleep, then the trash doesn't go anywhere and that doesn't help your body. And it's being lead to cognitive decline. There are some studies coming out concerning that it might even worsen Alzheimer's. So at the end of the day, it's a very common statement, but it's so true that, you know, sleep is important.
Yeah, very true. I'm glad you covered all that because I was about to ask, wow, like we often hear sleep apnea untreated, undiagnosed, right? It may relate to heart problem, increase the risk for stroke, like getting a stroke. So I'm thinking it's not just impact our body. Sounds like it's also impact our brain, our cognitive functioning, our memory, everything.
Most definitely. You know, think about it. Obstructive sleep apnea. I'm about to bring you back into Dr. Allen's office. So when I see patients, this is what I tell them. You know, when you fall asleep, all the muscles in your body relax. You know, your legs, your arms, even the muscles in the back of your throat. So if this is your mouth and this is the back of your throat, when you're awake, airway's open, air's going in and out, no problem. You fall asleep, muscles relax. And right in the back, it gets small. So when you're sleeping and breathing in, that's how snoring happens. And then all of a sudden, airway is closed. And so no oxygen is going to your heart, lung, or brain, but they don't know what's happening back there. So that's why your heart's working harder, lungs are breathing in deeper, your brain sends stress signals all over your body that you wake up. Well, your body does, not you. But it happens over and over again. That repeated oxygen drop, that intermittent hypoxia, where oxygen is not getting to your brain, that can damage memory centers, you know, especially the hippocampus. That's important for memory. And that sleep fragmentation, that doesn't help the memory consolidation. And so, yes, you are damaging your body. That's why I call it the slow killer. And untreated obstructive sleep apnea can lead to cognitive decline. It can even lead to dementia risk as well.
Yeah, I also want to add one more stress reaction to the partner because I do couple therapy sometime. And I have a lot of like bad partners so worried about their partner going to die in the middle of the night because the snoring sounds so scary.
You know, it's funny. I get that. There's two things I usually get with a bed partner. One, you know, that because usually when they come in and mostly my guys, the most common word I hear the most in my clinic is, my wife, you know, they're in here because they're like, they had it up to here and they want to sleep as well. And sometimes and you've probably seen this as well, I've seen a patient that comes in concerned for insomnia, but after talking to them, the reason why they're waking up in the middle of the night consistently and can't go back to sleep is because of their bed partner, that they're snoring. And so I start seeing the bed partner and guess what? Their insomnia is cured now. And so, yes, it affects the bed partner. And, you know, it affects everybody. And that's the whole thing about sleeping. And someone might say, you know what? I sleep by myself, so it's not a problem. If you're not getting quality sleep and you're working on the job, you might make a mistake. That decreases your, you know, efficiency. And even people that are drivers, like if you're not getting that quality sleep and you have a sleep disorder like obstructive sleep apnea, that's an increased chance of like hurting somebody because you're driving. And even if you're not a driver, it's all those things that goes too. So the decisions that you don't make to take care of your sleep just doesn't affect you. It affects everybody else.
Yes, exactly. I think I remember I read Dr. Wendy Trott's book, Sharing the Covers. She quotes some research that when a bed partner, especially the husband, snores, normally the wife's sleep really suffers. And the husband's snoring problem normally counts at least 50% of the wife's sleep complaints.
Oh, yes. And it's funny, I will talk to the bed partner if they're in my clinic the majority of the visit, if they're coming in, because the hardest part about my job, I got to talk to things about people that happens to them when they're unconscious. And, you know, and I always hear this thing like, oh, I sleep fine. And I'm like, I agree with you. I think you feel that you sleep fine, but you don't know what's happening. That's why I'm examining you. And this is why we're going to do that testing to figure it out.
Yes, definitely. I think we see a lot of people refer to sleep experts, sleep doctors by their partners, because they don't realize they have some kind of sleep breathing problem, but their partners, bed partners, really notice that and push them to treatment.
And, you know, and I've always, and usually when I see those patients, I'll tell them two things. You know, I've heard it before, I've fixed it before. And then it's funny because then when I fix it, then the patient that had the sleep disorder, like obstructive sleep apnea, when they're treated, now they're looking at their bed partner. He's like, I'm sleeping well now, but now I know that you're snoring. And like, maybe you should get checked too. And I'm like, that's okay. I see a lot of couples. I see mothers and sons, fathers and daughters. And so, yeah, it happens a lot like that.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I think all these are very helpful information. And is there any last wisdom you want to share with our audience before we end?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. One, I always tell people that do your best to prioritize sleep, because sleep is important. Even some of my colleagues, the first thing that people will sacrifice is sleep. If you think that, like, you got to study for a test in college, you're like, oh, I got to stay up all night. Or like your kids go to bed and you're like, well, this is my time and I'm not going to go to bed yet. But you still have to prioritize sleep, because sleep is important. That's the first thing I would say. And then the second thing is, you know, talk to your bed partner. You know, a lot of times where I'll see patients and I give them a sleep questionnaire, it gets that conversation started where they really didn't talk to their bed partner, and it's eye-opening for them. So it might be eye-opening for you. So if you have someone that have seen you sleep, even if you don't have a bed partner, somebody's seen you sleep at least once in your life, ask them, like, you know, how am I sleeping, or how did I sleep? Or when I was around, you know, did I snore? And the most important part, if you wake up and you still feel tired and you don't feel refreshed, talk to your provider, or more important, a sleep professional.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you so much. And if our listeners really want to learn more about your work and follow you on social media, sounds like you're a sleep influencer, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me on Instagram, on TikTok, and LinkedIn. And if you put in Sleep Dr. Chris, so Sleep Dr. Chris, like and follow.
Great. Yes, thank you. I will add all those information down in the description box. And so there's going to be links. People can click directly. Thank you very much, Dr. Allen. This is very helpful.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
So after the conversation, I'm actually curious. What do you think about this sleep myth and sleep treatment we covered today? Anything you did not know before? Or any more information you feel like we missed in our conversation, please feel free to leave a message down below or in the podcast platform. Let us know. You will find all the information about Dr. Allen down in the description box. Thank you for listening. Remember, sleep is an individualized thing. Respect your body. Listen to what your body is trying to show you. Go with the flow. Let go of the control. Really listen to the signal your body is trying to send you. And hopefully you will find the right method to help you make your sleep quality better. I'm Dr. Yi Shan, adjunct faculty at Stanford Sleep Center, board certified behavioral sleep medicine specialist. Thank you for listening. I will see you next time. Bye.
Sleep is an individual thing. We all sleep differently. And there is so much we can do to improve sleep quality. Keep hope and carry on. This podcast is for general informational purpose only and does not include the practice of medicine or other health professional services. Usage of the information we share is at the listener's own risk. And our content does not intend to be a substitute for any medical and professional services, diagnoses, and treatment. please seek professional health services as needed.